Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The market rotation continued for another week with more extreme moves across sectors and styles, and that certainly could continue this week with more events that investors will be closely scrutinizing. So joining us today to weigh in on this all, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, thank you for dropping by on this Monday morning to kick off another trading week. Welcome back and looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Dan. Happy Monday. It's good to be here again.
So, Jason, perhaps a good place to start. Can you begin by walking our listeners through what exactly has been driving these big market moves and rotations over at this point the past month?
Well, it's been quite dramatic in the markets overall, and some way more so beneath the surface headline numbers, which have certainly moved around quite a bit. But the churn or the rotation in the markets have been dramatic and in some cases almost unprecedented. In a good way to sort of distill it down is to look at what's happened within the tech sector, and you can look at the NASDAQ index as a proxy for that, and then also small cap stocks, and with the Russell 2000 index being a proxy for that. You know, in the first half of the year, the NASDAQ was up 18% through the end of June. The Russell was up 1%. Since that time, or now year to date, the NASDAQ is up 15%, meaning it's down 3% in the month of July, whereas the Russell index is up 10% year to date or 9% in July. So that 17% gap that existed between the two indices in the first 6 months of the year, that's down to only 5%. So 11 percentage point kind of swing in the course of just 4 weeks. And you can see other areas of the markets where there's been a really sharp kind of rotation of different areas of trades that have worked very well for the first half of the year, kind of getting unwound. So major rotation. The question is, like, what drove this? And I'd say it was sort of two stages of how this has evolved so far. The first stage began when we got good inflation data for June. That was back on July 11th. Following labor market data that also, you know, was good, collectively reinforcing one, the view of the soft landing is on track, but also most specifically reinforcing the investor belief that the Fed is now has good justification and will likely cut rates beginning in September. And as a result, that's allowed the markets to kind of broaden out their, you know, positioning areas of the markets that have lagged in the first half that would benefit from the soft landing, benefit from rate cuts, such as small cap stocks. They benefit from that. And really, but what we saw from a first stage is more of, from a positioning perspective, investors who were short these areas of the market that had really lagged, there's a lot of short covering going on. So, for example, on July 11th, when that inflation data came out, you saw the Russell index was up 3% that day, the NASDAQ was down to 2%. That kind of move is highly unusual. There's a handful of days, like literally on, you count the number of days on one hand over the past 30 years where you saw that kind of performance kind of gap. The second stage of this rotation was really kind of catalyzed actually last week by the corporate earnings announcements from Google and Tesla. The numbers were, like, certainly for Google, like, in line or even exceeded expectations. What was kind of really concerning investors was just the growing concerns about all this money being spent on investing in AI, building infrastructure, you know, building data centers to test these models, to develop these capabilities, yet without clear evidence of sort of new revenues being generated for those companies or kind of across the, you know, other companies as well. And so raising a fear that perhaps this AI CapEx story is overdone, and then therefore you got to pull back. And the numbers from Google were, again, you know, beat expectations, but they weren't spectacular in terms of their guidance, in terms of, you know, more investment spending that's taking place. So given that, given the markets and those stocks in particular were priced almost for perfection in terms of how this AI story would play out, what you then had is not just short covering, but I think some outright selling, you know, led by the tech sector, but kind of across the board as a lot of hedge funds and other, you know, some more fast money investors were starting to kind of de-risk their overall portfolios. So that was kind of where, as you move towards the end of last week, that's where things were headed. What we saw on Friday and perhaps this morning as well is a little bit more stabilization as equity markets have kind of are bouncing back. Another notable development also is kind of a carry trade that's gone on among the first half of this year. And a carry trade is where investors will perhaps borrow in one currency where interest rates are incredibly low to invest in another market where interest rates are higher. So the classic example is for investors to buy or borrow in Japanese yen to buy U.S. dollar assets. And as the Japanese yen was weakening for much of this year, it was very attractive to kind of buy dollar assets because then you could buy back yen, even more yen later on. what we saw was a very sharp reversal over the course of a couple of weeks, where the yen fell to all the way to 160 and then rallied back to 152 in just a matter of a couple of days on shifting expectations for interest rates. So if the Fed's going to cut sooner, all signal that starts to undermine the logic behind this carry trade. So all these things have caused big rotations, big adjustments, big positioning move changes, you know, for the markets this month. A lot of churn, you know, and much more so below the surface. Yes, headline numbers, headline returns have evolved, but I think the real story is sort of this rotation underneath the surface. And the big driver has been economic data, earnings results, and then the position amplifying both those information flows.
So, Jason, outside of the Fed meeting, the two other big events are the July jobs report. Those numbers come out on Friday morning. We also have a continuation of Q2 earnings reports. This week, we will be hearing from four of the so-called Magnificent Seven names. So what can we expect, and why do these two factors matter?
We'll start with the payrolls and the other labor market data we'll get this week, which includes the JOLTS data, the job openings, for June. It comes out with about a month lag. You know, the weekly initial jobless claims, you know, other data along that lines, including the employment cost index, which is a quarterly measure that will, you know, come out that indicates how much are essentially overall wage costs going up. It's the broadest measure that includes, you know, base salary bonuses, things of that sort, that is a good indication of what's the overall kind of stress or pressure for kind of wage growth as an inflation measure. So there's a lot of data there. But thinking most specifically about the payrolls report, it will kind of further either kind of increase confidence in the soft landing. And the consensus right now is about 175,000 new jobs created. If it comes along with that, that's again very consistent with a soft landing. But it's also not, you know, a labor market that can use to kind of run, you know, too high. It's sort of consistent also with kind of gradual, you know, cooling. I'd say a couple weeks ago, this might have been a more focus in terms of like a good jobs number, because there's been rising concerns about, you know, is the economy slowing. Last week, we got the second quarter GDP number. It came in at 2.8%. Private final sales basically means like kind of the private sector, what is that doing? How fast is it growing? It grew at 2.7%. These are solid numbers coming after other recent data on retail sales, on industrial production that have all been pretty solid. So what we actually might be seeing is from the end of June into July, almost a bit of reacceleration of growth after sort of a soft patch or certainly some disappointing data we saw in April and May. So some of those growth concerns that existed at the start of the month, those have been alleviated, but definitely a lot of focus on the payroll. So, you know, have a good number that is both, you know, solid with in terms of the overall growth story, but not necessarily too hot and not inflationary, and enough for the Fed to say the labor market's cooling enough that we need to now start thinking about cutting rates to get to the kind of back in balance between our dual mandate of price stability and full employment. One quirk about the data on Friday to make note of is that during the sort of the survey week when they estimate the job growth, that was also when the consequences of Hurricane Beryl were kind of being felt, where a lot of people might have been falling for unemployment claims, hiring might have been impacted in large parts of the country. So that could actually drag down the result by, I see estimates of 20 or 30,000 of how much that could impact growth. So it's also possible if the numbers are a little bit on the low side, like in the 150 range, that investors might also be willing to kind of dismiss it because this is being distorted by the hurricane impact as well. So that will be a big focus later in the week. As we go throughout the week from Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we have four of the Mag 7 reporting. That includes Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta or Facebook. Given the concerns that I alluded to earlier with the amount of AI CapEx spending, is it too much? Is it not yielding actually any revenue or earnings benefits? You know, hearing guidance from those companies, and particularly probably Microsoft, because they can actually embed AI tools into their Microsoft kind of Copilot. They can give guidance to whether this is having an impact, whether their trend growths are. So after concerns last week of perhaps there's a lot of money being spent without a lot of return, this could sort of halt that and get investors, okay, we're still on track. And, so, and the rotation we've seen in the markets, the kind of the pullback, some investors might view this as an opportunity to kind of re-engage some of the stocks that have been hit, you know, reasonably hard in this space because of concerns about, you know, the prices being overinflated by optimism in terms of how much AI, you know, could play out. This could sort of alleviate that. On the flip side, you know, if these other companies also kind of disappoint or are a little bit underwhelming, it could exacerbate the move and sort of the rotation in the market. So I think of all the events this week, from the Fed and FOMC meeting to the growth data in the labor market specifically, the earnings reports for these companies are probably the most relevant, especially when you look at how large these companies are in terms of their market cap and how much they account for the overall index. for the S&P, but even more so for the NASDAQ or for the tech sector, these will move markets. They will cause rotations, you know, if their numbers don't, you know, kind of align with what investors expect, or if they exceed, it can put that kind of rotation definitely on pause for an extended period of time, if not outright reverse it. So that is probably the most significant. These micro level stock stories are macro level market moving events at this point in time.
So now that we have a better understanding of what's been driving the rotation and market choppiness, as well as what we can learn over the next few days, the question becomes, Jason, how long could this last?
Well, I mentioned earlier that the rotation thus far this month has been sort of a two-stage process. One was triggered by economic data, soft landing, you know, a confidence that led to a lot of kind of short coverage. The next stage was more on the micro-level AI narrative that led to some outright selling. When we look at sort of the positioning, what we can see for different sort of types of strategies, hedge fund positioning, I would describe the data in terms of kind of cleaning up excess allocations and concentrated position as we came into the month. We're now sort of the seventh or eighth inning of that process. And I base that if you look at, you know, there's, you know, a vol targeting strategy where certain investors use rules of how they will target a certain level of volatility for the portfolio. When volatility is low, they kind of ramp up the amount of leverage they have to kind of amplify the returns. As volatility increases, they decrease that leverage to kind of, you know, kind of make sure they're not taking excessive positioning. That might have been excessive, or at least relatively elevated levels of kind of risk on positioning, leverage use at the beginning of the month. Now that's probably, that positioning data suggests it's probably back down to closer to kind of a three-year average. So let's say it's about like a 65th percentile of where it's been. And the same thing with hedge funds. They've actually outright de-risked. They've kind of sold across the board to take down their overall positioning, you know, to go from relevant elevated levels to something that's kind of, again, closer to, you know, 2-3 year kind of averages. So definitely off the extremes. There could be more to go, but that big kind of adjustment, that sort of off balance in positioning, that looks like it's, again, probably 75% of the way done, which means whether it's this week, next week, once the dust settles on some of these major news events, that should sort of tail off. The positions should say they'll tail off as a either driver for market pullbacks or the rotation. I'd also say, just when you put the moves in context, just keep in mind that for a lot of this discussion, the S&P 500 is down 3.5% from its all-time high in July 16th, and it's back to what it was on June 28th. So basically, the S&P 500 is flat for the month, and given the futures, it looks like it's actually going to be up again, you know, on Monday. The VIX Volatility Index, kind of a gauge of the Wall Street Fear Index, got up to 19 last week. It's back down to just over 16 as of Monday morning. From a long-term perspective, 16 is relatively low. It's not as low as 12, but, you know, people look at this, you know, period as analogous a little bit to the dot-com era. For much of the late 1990s, the VIX was around 20. So we're not even at those kind of levels, and it's still relatively contained. We're seeing correlations in equity markets remain low. So one of the consequences of a rotation is that, you know, as you sell some stuff and buy others, the things that are sort of offsetting the winners and the losers at the overall index level, they kind of balance out. So that's why you're not seeing at that broad market level these really kind of big moves, not in the same way at the individual stock level. And that's also kind of keeping volatility somewhat contained. Then credit spreads for corporates, you know, for like S&P 500 companies, they've actually fell, you know, during the month, or at least at most are sort of kind of flat. If there was real concerns about some economic stress, you'd see those spreads widening from very tight levels. So what it suggests is that this has been a kind of a churn within equities, a rebalancing, a bit of a pullback after things perhaps got a little overextended by the end of June or even into early, you know, July. And then as that position gets cleaned up, the fundamental story from the economic perspective is still quite good. And perhaps, you know, some of the stocks got overextended, you know, on earnings optimism. That narrative could either be curtail this week or amplify, but even there, I think it's likely to be mostly done within the next couple of days.
Accounting for the recent market movement coupled with what's ahead of us, how should investors think about positioning at the moment? What are you recommending?
Well, certainly no reason to real panic because, again, the fundamental story is still solid. Even the corporate earnings that caused concern last week instead of definitely market movement, these are companies that actually beat expectations. It just, they weren't spectacular in terms of their guidance going forward. We will likely continue to get sort of some choppiness, maybe more weakness as this week goes on, depending on how all these various factors, the corporate earnings, the Fed meeting, the economic data on the labor market kind of play out. Given all that, you know, our general guidance would be to kind of stick with the kind of the playbook we've had for our second half outlook. You don't chase this rotation towards more of the cyclical parts of the market or small caps. You should have allocations to them in your portfolio, but don't kind of chase them at this point in time. But also don't abandon tech. We still like the sector, and given the bar had been very high. Now it's probably been reset to a little bit more realistic expectations. We think the fundamental story, the key drivers for the tech sector still, and AR, are still very much in place. And that rotation that's existed for July, by the time we get to August, you know, the end of the week, that rotation could reverse. So the idea of kind of seed quality growth in equities, and kind of optimize your AI exposure or look for opportunities in AI, we still think that's the right messaging. And then within fixed income, you know, with the Feds not cutting this week, but likely in September, and other central banks kind of following kind of that overall direction of travel, you know, the key message would be the like kind of position for lower rates. And we've seen, you know, the curve kind of steepen out as the front of the curve have gone low on the anticipation of the Fed cutting rates. So for those who have been just kind of on the sidelines and in cash, given some of the churn and the pullback in equity markets, there are opportunities. And also within fixed income, looking to maybe extend some duration into lock and yield at kind of levels before they go ultimately, we think, even a little bit lower before year end.
Well, Jason, as always, a very productive conversation. Thank you for dropping by to help our listeners, our clients, make sense of these recent market movements, a preview for us what will be a very busy and perhaps market-moving week ahead, and as always, ending on guidance when it comes to portfolio positioning. So thank you again, Jason, for your time today. We'll keep in touch throughout the week and do look forward to our next conversation.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.